It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Live it off the wall. Where you give the best sports talk and info in New York.
I got a special treat for you this evening. A young man that you all know is Joe the Policeman from the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama. I want you to put your hands together and welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause for Jackson Heights' own
Mr. Chris Shan.
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Shan.
Wow, what an intro. Joe Auriemma, the godfather of YesNetwork.com, put that together. We appreciate that. And Teddy Spicer, who also hosts the Weekly Dish on YesNetwork.com, your little voice over there to get all you males in the mood for some sports talk. Teddy, thank you very much as well. We are in my office in the YesNetwork.com building in the barracks here in Connecticut. And you know what? Let's get right to it. Let's start, obviously. This is a Yankee website, a Yankee network.
Got to go with the Yankees.
You got to go with the Yankees. So let's start with the Yankees. Now, I've been sitting on my hands mostly all season long, not being able to vent, not being able to vent my frustrations, not being able to do anything. Now, listen, I host Yankees batting practice today. I write my blog where I get to be on my soapbox for a little bit. But this is where I get to have a little coffee. Make that a lot of coffee, caffeinated. Oh boy, am I caffeinated. And I get to just spew my venom on whatever I want to talk about, but we're going to start with the Yankees. And in one of my blogs, as I plug it, it's on YesNetwork.com, along with Bob Lorenz and Kim Jones and Mrs. Singleton and the Yes blog and everybody who has blogs there. Joe Auriemma has a blog too. He's the producer of this podcast, and he'll be popping in every once in a while.
Hello.
Like now.
Good to be on the podcast, Chris. Thank you very much.
It's great to have you here. But I myself, I'm bald, as most of you know. You watch BPTV or the Nets pre and post game, you see me, I'm bald. The goatee comes in every once in a while. So I've been calling myself the Lighthouse of Hope. All of you negative Yankee fans are out there in choppy waters that you think are choppy waters in the sea of negativity that is the New York area. And this guy, the bald guy, is standing on solid ground because that's where this team is, solid ground. And my big bald head, my job, is to get you off of that boat that's rocking in that sea of negativity and bring you to the promised land that is solid ground. That's my job.
Newt Rockne over here. I love it.
It's my job. What more do you people want? This team is 19 games over 500. And I know there's going to be callers to, you know, talk radio and people walking around the street talking to their buddies. Oh, the Yankees are in first, but they haven't beat the Red Sox yet. Oh, good Lord. What more do you want? Despite losing eight games, eight, they haven't beaten them yet. They haven't beaten Boston. They're in first place. And you're probably still miserable. Hey, I got news for you. There's always Kansas City. There's always Cincinnati. And there's always your backyard. You can always go to Queens. They're having a hell of a season over there. We'll get to that a little later, too. I don't know what you want. You're never happy. Yankee fans are never happy. You could be happy today. But I guarantee you this. If the Yankees lose their next two games, two, and they suddenly drop to a game behind the Red Sox, Annie M is coming. It's a twister. It's a twister. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't know what you want. Do you want to go back to the Yankees of the late 80s and early 90s? Circa 1988 to 1992 to be exact. Let's go back to the 1989 New York Yankees, Joe. Okay, 1989.
It's One of my favorite teams. Yeah, they were good.
What? Hold on now. They finished 74-87. They were in fifth place out of seven teams in the American League East. Okay? Andy Hawkins was the ace of the pitching staff.
Chris, didn't he throw a no-hitter and lost the game that year?
That is correct. A no-hitter and lost the game! You want to complain about something? Get in Doc Brown's DeLorean, go back to 1989, then you could be and moan all you want. Okay?
Hey, listen, let me tell you something. 1989 was a good year just for the fact that Bob Shepard got to say Alvaro Espinosa.
That's the only good thing about that year. Because let me tell you something else. Your bullpen, which you were so worried about this year, which is coming into its own with Phil Hughes, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Consisted. Are you right? Are you bolted down for this? Eric Plunk.
Eric Kerplunk, actually.
Richard Dotson, who his last name is now a defunct car as well. And Lee Gooderman. That was your bullpen. I'm not going to get on Dave Rigetti, who was the closer, because Dave Rigetti is sacred to me. Not going to clump him in with all these guys. And I don't mean to pick on these players. That's not my thing. My thing is to have you people realize how soon we forget. How soon we forget that this team, every stinking year, from 88 to 92, was not competitive. Andy Hawkins was the ace. One starter, one freaking starter, had a winning record. You know what his name was? Joey?
Was it Scott Sanders?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
It was Walt Terrell.
Oh, wow. Walt Terrell.
Walt Terrell was 6-5. That was your one starter. And he was like a fourth or fifth guy with a winning record. 1989, who else was on that team? Ken Phelps.
I just won us the pennant.
How could you trade Jay Buhner for Ken Phelps? Mr. Costanza said it. I'll repeat it. But let's continue here. Let's keep moving on. 1990, another great year. My junior year of high school was great being a Yankee fan. That team finished 67-95. Dead last. Seventh out of seven in the American League East. Three guys. Three. Joey, count with me.
Okay.
One, two, three. Had double-digit home runs. You know who they were? Roberto Kelly. Steve Balboni.
Always a classic.
And Jesse Barfield.
Wow.
Three!
That's pretty pathetic.
Three. You know how many have double-digit home runs on the Yankees this year? In the starting lineup?
I believe the whole team does.
Thank you. You want to complain? Once again, Doc Brown, where are you? Where's the DeLorean? Get in the car, go back to 90. I don't want to hear any complaining this year. You people are spoiled, rotten. You're like a five-year-old who gets whatever he wants or she wants in the store when your parents go out shopping. Never happened to me. Mom and Dad, it was a little sketchy. I got a little smack on the hand. No, you're not getting that. And that's what Yankee fans need more of. One pitcher on that 1990 team had a winning record. Joe?
All right. Let me see. I'm going to go with Lee Gooderman.
You are correct. And what was Lee Gooderman?
He was 11-7 that year.
And what was he? Was he a starter?
No, he was a reliever.
Thank you. Which means no freaking starter had a winning record.
Andy Hawkins went 5-12.
Thank you. Could also talk about Rick Rodin. He was okay. Better golfer, I think. And again, you know, I'm trying to inject a little humor. I'm not knocking these players. They were still professionals. They were professional baseball players. The point I'm trying to make is that you Yankee fans are spoiled. Again, I'm going to say it again. This team is 19 games over 500 this year. They're a game ahead of the Red Sox in first place, despite losing 8 to Boston already. If someone were to come up to you before the season, and I hear this all the time on talk radio, would you sign for that? If someone came up to me and said, Chris, right after the All-Star break, the Yankees are going to have a game lead over the Red Sox, but they will have lost 8 to them. They wouldn't have beaten them once. Will you sign for that? Now, I wouldn't be happy that they didn't beat the Red Sox, but to be in first place after not making the playoffs last year, where's the dotted line? Where could I put my Herbie Hancock?
That's John Hancock.
Thank you. So 19 games over 500. And the other thing I have to talk about is, you know, as I started this out, I have been the lighthouse of hope. I have been the glass half full Yankee fan. When I am surrounded by glass half empty Yankee fans in that sea of negativity that I talked about. And it's only fitting that we're taping my first podcast, our first podcast on yesnetwork.com. It's only fitting the day we tape it, the team stands alone in first place. And it's something that I say all the time in my blog, and I'm going to bring it up now. And people in this area have Janet Jackson disease. It's what have you done for me lately? It's not, you know, I don't care that they're 19 games over 500. They haven't beaten the Red Sox yet. I don't care that they're 19 games over 500. They're not 10 games in first place. I don't know what you want. But that was that. Let's start moving on. The first topic we have to discuss is Phil Hughes and what he's meant to this bullpen. All season long, I've been saying that Jabba Chamberlain should be the eighth inning guy. Well, you know, when he reaches his innings limit, he might very well be, and that Yankee bullpen might look seventh inning Phil Hughes, eighth inning Jabba Chamberlain, ninth inning Mariano Rivera. And in the playoffs, if you get a, you know, if you get AJ Burnett and CC Sabathia and maybe an Andy Pettit hot, hey, I don't think there's a better back end. If Phil Hughes keeps pitching the way he's pitching, I don't think there's a better back end to a bullpen in Major League Baseball.
And that's not including the way Phil Koch's been pitching, the way Alfredo Aceves has been pitching. And if Brian Bruni can get himself right, have a little control.
They're stacked. As far as Jabba Chamberlain goes, now we could debate this. You just talked to Joe Girardi, so I'll let you talk about this a little bit more in depth than I will, because you know you were talking to the head guy, the big cheese.
Yeah.
But I'll just give you my thoughts. I really did think because he's on an innings limit, because he wasn't really having very good luck as a starter earlier in the season, I just thought he was better suited to be in that eighth inning. But now that Phil Hughes has made his presence known and, you know, announced his presence with authority. As Nuke LaLoosh did, and there'll be a lot of pop culture and movie references,
yeah,
with us doing this. But, you know, Chamberlain has been pushed to the back burner in the bullpen for now because of Hughes's emergence. But I really do still think that Chamberlain's best use to this ball club, and you can disagree with me or not, John Flaherty and Flash Forward all season long, we both agreed with this. Flash, of course, is a former catcher, you know, a former, by the way, major league catcher. So all you bloggers out there who, you know, I'm not going to say you don't know anything about baseball, but I think Flash has a little bit more knowledge than you do. When it comes to a reliever or a starter, and you know he's caught a lot more major league pitchers than you have, and I have,
including a couple of Hall of Famers in there, by the way.
Mariano,
and he was Randy Johnson's personal catcher.
Well, there you go. That was one of my favorite Flash memories, but I won't get into that now. But but my point is, he's like E.F. Hutton. When he talks, I'm going to listen.
Right,
and that's a callback to like the early 90s, that commercial, stupid commercial, when E.F. Hutton talks, you listen. Anyway, but give us a feel. What did the manager have to say about Jabba?
Well, basically, I spoke with Joe, and I said, in his last outing, Jabba looked amazing. Is it just a matter of him being more aggressive, attacking hitters, and really just getting that velocity back where it needs to be to challenge these hitters instead of getting in 3-2 counts? I said it's got to be a little concerning that, you know, he's started 18 games and he's only got 7 decisions. He's only 5-2. And, you know, I've done a weekly Q&A with Joe for the last 2 years, and this was the, you know, it feels like it's a little bit of a hot-button issue for Girardi. He told me, you know, in so many words, this guy is still young. He's still in a growth process. He didn't want to say, you know, he said, oh, well, you know, yeah, he is attacking hitters. He did attack hitters in the last outing and looked great. But by the same token, you know, he just, he wants to do that in every outing. It's not that he doesn't want to do that in every outing. He's just young.
And to everybody out there who gets all excited about his last outing with the Tigers, A, you should. But B, you have to, see, as a Yankee fan, you can't get too high and you can't get too low.
Right.
You got to stay in the middle. If you stay in the middle, you won't have those spikes where, you know, you're on the edge of a bridge waiting to jump off, or you're guaranteeing a World Series.
No,
if
I
you
agree.
Stay in the middle, especially with this last start, give Jabba the second half. You have to. He had a great start against the Tigers. He had a great start against the Tigers earlier in the season. He's 2-0 against the Tigers. Two of his five wins are against Detroit.
Against Detroit.
Okay, so don't start proclaiming, oh, Jabba's back. You can't give him his next start. You got to give him at least the next 5 or 6 starts until you could really see what this kid, as you said, Girardi is saying, this kid can bring to the table the rest of the season.
He said that. I mean, it's Island has worked with him a lot. Jabba is working. He's, you know, it's not like he's, you know, in between starts. He's not trying to be more aggressive or attack hitters or, you know, avoid those 3-2 counts, those high pitch counts that get him out of the game in the 4th, 5th inning. This is something that comes with experience. It comes with being a major league pitcher, and it comes with learning strike zones, learning hitters. It's a process. And he said, you know, people had high expectations of Jabba when he came out of the bullpen.
And when that happens in this area, when you have high expectations, they want it now. They
right.
want it now. They're like Veruca Salt. They want everything now.
Right.
I want the Jabba to be good now, Daddy. That's what they want.
And you're going to get flashes of Jabba.
Patience.
Right? You're going
to
get
you
flashes
have to have
of
patience.
Good and bad Jabba. But, you know, like I said, the manager, he told me that just, you know, continue to be patient. And
that was an awful Veruca Salt impression.
That wasn't great.
I have to work on that.
Yeah,
I made a Russian.
The Willy Wonka reference was good, though.
Yeah,
but again, Joe said that it's just a matter of him being young, and that's it.
All right, well let's go to our next topic, Roy Halladay, and then we'll take a break. So we're gonna touch on Roy Halladay really quick, and then we'll take a break. Halladay, I just read in the paper today that J.P. Ricciardi, the GM of the Toronto Blue Jays, is now putting a date on when he wants to.
Yeah,
this.
I saw that.
So what everybody's thinking now is that the Blue Jays aren't really going to shop him. They're still shopping him. They're still looking for that, you know,
they have to be
diamond in the
away.
Rough deal.
Right.
But as far as everybody's concerned now, they're thinking, hey, the Blue Jays are going to keep him. Which I think, you know, they were competitive at the beginning of the season. They've tailed off, obviously. It's probably the best division in baseball by all means. And this is another point I wanted to bring up before we continue with Halladay. If you look at the Yankees, and I know this really doesn't matter to a lot of fans out there, but they're in first place in every other division except the NL West.
Right. Who the Dodgers have just a young pitching core.
Think about
good
that.
Offense. Yeah, I mean, and a terrible division in the NL
Think
West.
About
yes.
that.
Yes. Their record is second to only the Dodgers.
Anyway, all right, that was just another tangent. And we'll do that, too.
And I was just going to tell you, you know, they put this July 28th deadline. But people seem to forget that Roy Halladay is not going to be a free agent after this season. It's after next season. So they have 3 opportunities to trade this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So is J.P. Ricciardi really going to get full value at this point in time when he's not a free agent even until next year? They could trade him in the offseason and get even more value. Or they could wait till the next trade deadline and really get a lot of value for him.
And I think that's what he should do. I think maybe he wanted to test the waters this year to see what teams would offer.
Right.
And maybe his plan was, you know what, let's put him out there, but I'm not going to do anything until next year.
It's a good plan. I mean, just let's test the waters. Let's see what we can do. Let's see what we can get for him. Let's see what his market value is. So.
All right, Joe, we still got plenty more to do on this inaugural edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. We will have more right after this.
Go to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankee blogs, original content, and Yankees info on the web. Your one-stop site is YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Thank you, Teddy, and don't forget Joe Auriemma as well. There'll be more from Joe, especially in this next segment, I'm sure. It's the cover of the New York Post on Wednesday, July 22nd. Peephole vid outrage, Aaron's perv fury, and what else can you expect from the New York Post?
It says I'm actually a little disappointed in that headline. I thought they'd come up with something a little funnier.
Well, see, this is my problem with this whole thing. The byline, by the way, is going all out to put sicko perp in prison, and you know what? Good for her. And here's my take. Now, when this first broke, I guess a couple days ago. Of course, there's got to be some Oliver Stone conspiracy theorists saying that she planted the camera there, or ESPN planted the camera there, to get ratings and to make her more popular. Here's my take. Aaron Andrews does college sports, does hockey for ESPN, does the sideline stuff. She does football, she does basketball. Not only is she very attractive, she's very good at what she does.
Yes.
Okay. Paris Hilton needs to put a sex tape out. She needs the attention. She needs that publicity because where else is she getting it?
She's not a celebrity.
Where is she getting it?
Exactly.
She's not getting it anywhere else.
From nowhere else.
Aaron Andrews doesn't need this. So to all you people out there who think ESPN did this or she did this, you're fools. You're absolute fools. You're probably the same people who think we didn't land on the moon. You're probably the same people who think Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. He might have. But it was a conspiracy. I'll go with that one.
Now you're turning into Oliver Stone.
Yeah, I know, but that's a sketchy one. But this, my feeling on this, Aaron didn't need to do this. She has plenty of publicity. She's great at what she does. And she's very smart. She knows that if she put herself up to this whole thing, her career's over. Her career, in yeah. sports TV at least. She might have a career on Playboy, if that's what she wants, but she knows this would not do anything but harm her career at ESPN or in future endeavors in sports.
I mean, the real issue on this now is that just what an invasion of privacy on this poor girl. I mean, I'm not going to say that, you know, this, it wasn't, I'm gonna admit it.
Be careful.
I happened to stumble over
the video. I'm sure you did.
And while I think she's very attractive and wonderful and she does great work on air, even I'm guilty because I actually watched it.
All right, well, listen, if you're a red-blooded American male, okay, or red-blooded any kind of male, I should say, it's going to pique your interest. It really is. You're not stupid. You see her on the sidelines. She's very attractive. But having a daughter that's 8 months old and being a father now, it changes your perspective. And it will when you have a child, too, especially if it's a daughter. And the only thing I think of when I see things like this
is her parents.
Not only her parents, but her.
Yeah.
That is like, you might think I'm crazy, but that's like raping someone. You're taking their privacy away. You're taking a part of them away. She didn't want everybody to see her like that. I know she didn't want everybody to see her like that. And you know what? If the first person that comes to me and says they're never naked in their hotel room, they're lying. You're not dancing when you're getting out of the shower? I am.
Oh, boy.
But nobody's putting a camera on a peephole in me.
That's a bad vision.
That's for sure. But it's just, it's awful. I'm not making light of it. Absolutely not. And I hope they find whoever did this.
I hope she goes on a crusade and finds this guy.
I hope they're able to track down, you know, the IP address to where it originated from. Wow, Chris, that's great English there.
It's the King's English.
Yeah. I hope they find out where it originated from, and I hope they track whoever did this down, he or she, because who knows? Could have been somebody with the hotel, and I read in the paper today that, you know, could be an inside job at ESPN. I really don't think it's going to change anything. In fact, I think there was a company in England, I read this was like one of those wacky news things. They did an experiment where everybody had the option of coming to work nude.
That's like naked news.
And I think ESPN should have a day where everyone comes in nude.
Oh.
And then that way...
Have you seen some of the people that work
at
ESPN?
That way, you know, if they picture...
It's a level playing field.
If they picture her nude, then... She could picture them nude, and I'm sure some of them would never want to be seen without their clothes on.
Right.
And I'm sure she never wanted to be seen without her clothes on. I just think that the conspiracy theorists need an enema. Joe?
This town needs an enema.
Yes, it does. And we're going to have more off the wall. We're going to get to your calls and your comments through the voicemails that we received. And then after that, we'll have some fun with your calls. And then after that, we're going to wrap up this first edition of the Off the Wall podcast. We'll be back, Joe Auriemma, Chris Sheeran, right after this.
Go to yesnetwork.com for the best Yankee blogs, original content, and Yankees info on the web. Your one-stop site is yesnetwork.com.
Want to have your voice heard? Leave a comment or question on the Yankees and anything else sports-related for Chris at 646-487-3668. And now back to Off the Wall.
Are we sure that's for Off the Wall? That number? As Christopher Russo, you say something funny.
A little Marvin Gaye there, Mikey.
Oh boy. great job by Teddy Spicer, who once again also does the weekly dish on yesnetwork.com. You should check that out as well. It's time now on Off the Wall, the podcast version, to go through our voicemails. As Teddy just said, if you want to have your voice heard on the podcast, you have to go to 646-487-3668. All the information's on yesnetwork.com, and we'll pick the best from the week, and we'll get you on the show. Just remember to keep it as short as possible. That helps us out as well. Just get your question or comment in there, and we will try to get you on the show.
Keep it short and sweet.
Yes. Terse is a sophomore vocabulary word.
Yeah, terse.
Terse.
Terse. It's like Charles Barkley. Terse.
All right. So, our first podcast caller ever.
It is. We write this down in the record books. We got to have this.
It's like your first dollar bill you put up on the wall when you have a business.
Right.
So Dennis from Democrats.org is our first caller.
Yes, my name is Dennis at Democrats.org. And I'd like to make a point that since 1961, the only times that the Yankees have won a World Series has happened with a Democrat in the White House. You could look it up. That's right. No World Series victories under Nixon, Reagan, Ford, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush. And so... just because we elected Barack Obama doesn't mean it's going to happen this year, but it might. It's a coincidence anyway. But as far as the Yankees' chances this year, they have to beat the Red Sox. They're going to have to do that. It's good that they beat the Tigers 3 in a row, but we'll see what they can do against the Red Sox. It looks promising, but they really have to hit a lot better. Anyway, thank you for allowing me to express my views. I have rooted for the Yankees for 52 years now, since 1957. That's right, 7 years old. 52 years as a Yankee fan. Anyway, Have a good day. This is Dennis at Democrats.org.
So Dennis, a Yankee fan for 52 years.
Wow.
My goodness. I mean, that's that spans, you know,
many presidents,
yes,
as he said.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, it does. And that's a very interesting point that he brings up. Since 1961, the Yankees have not won a World Series with a Republican in office. And
that's
now that
amazing.
Barack Obama is in there, hey, I guess the Yankees have a shot.
Yeah, seriously. And, you know, the two championships they won in the 70s were under Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
The four that they won in the 90s were under
Bill Clinton.
That's amazing.
Because George W. Bush didn't get there till 2001 when they lost
exactly.
to the Diamondbacks.
Exactly.
He did throw out the first pitch, and that was probably one of the best things ever in his presidency. Threw a rifle strike.
I'd rather not talk about that word.
That was Green, wasn't it? The catcher?
Yes.
Okay, great. But getting back to Dennis, by the way, as we go off on tangents, Dennis also brought up that the Yankees have to beat the Red Sox. They have to hit better. Obviously, that's the case. I mean, but still, as we said earlier in the podcast, having lost 8 games to them and still being a game ahead of them, you have to sign for that.
Looking from it from the other side, though, Chris, I mean, they are 2-12 against the Angels and the Red Sox this year. Two potential teams that they have to face in the postseason this year. I get it. They're in first place. Just looking at it from another perspective, these are two teams that they're going to have to face.
Well, I'll throw something else at you. They were 6-0 against the Indians in 2007, and the Indians bounced them right out of the playoffs.
No, you're absolutely right.
So,
on that. You just don't know.
You could look at it from both sides.
The hottest team does win the World Series. That's what we've learned since the inception
team
of the wild card.
Pitching wins championships.
Yeah, you're right.
If you're riding 3 good pitching horses into the playoffs, the sky's the limit, as I get an email. I don't know if you heard that or not, but
yep, I heard it.
My computer made a noise. I got an email. So anyway, let's roll on with the callers. Next up is Meredith from Manhattan.
Hello there. This is Meredith from Manhattan. And I was just wondering if you think that the Yankees should trade for Doc Holliday or for someone else. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, Meredith. Very good question. Should the Yankees get Doc Holliday? We brought this up earlier in the podcast as well. Steve Nagy also called on this, but Steve was a little wordy. Steve, knock it down a little bit. Your deal was good, but me personally, the only way I think the Yankees should deal for Holliday and mortgage their farm system, which is what they're going to have to do to get him, is if the Red Sox are on the precipice of dealing for him. Because if the Red Sox were to get Holliday, I think they'd be unstoppable in the postseason.
I personally think the only way the Yankees are getting Roy Halladay is if they take that ridiculous 4-year, $80 million contract back of Vernon Wells, in which the Yankees wouldn't have to mortgage the farm. They wouldn't have to trade a lot of their prospects, their chips, because Toronto just wants to unload their
contract. Favor.
Yeah.
Hey, do me a favor.
And for everybody that's said they don't think the Toronto Blue Jays would trade within the division, well, I mean, what are you basing this on? They traded David Cone to the Yankees in the 90s. They traded Roger Clemens to the Yankees in the 90s. So what exactly are we going on here? So I think a deal could be made. I just think the Yankees...
I guess the argument you can make there, Joe, is that they thought Clemens was, you know, in the twilight of his career, and they thought Cone was in the...
I know
he did, but I think they thought he was on the downside, and I think they knew Cone was only going to give the Yankees maybe a couple of years. He gave him more than that.
No,
but
I know.
I just think that's the difference. Holliday is 32 years old. He's going to give a team at least 6 or 7 more years where he's going to win at least 15 games a season.
Now, I don't agree with that because now, you know, we've seen guys like Roger Clemens go into their 40s and be, you know, effective pitchers. However, that's not the norm. I mean, the norm is that pitchers start to really go on the decline at 34, 35 years old. So they're going to have to bring back a pitcher and then sign him to a long-term deal, not knowing whether they're going to get a Roy Halladay at 36.
That's a fair point, and I give you props for it, but I look at a guy like Mike Mussina, who just retired. He was 38,
39. 38 years old, yes.
And, you know, I just think good pitchers, as they get older, they may lose velocity, but they get craftier. And if Holliday is craftier then than he is now, I know he might not be bringing it the same way. He might not have the same movement, but good pitchers always find a way to win ball games. Joey, let's get to our next caller, and it's Lucille on a topic that I wanted to bring up earlier and I forgot. Lucille, take it away.
Hi, this is Lucille from New Jersey. I'm one of the original Yankees sheet fans. Just want to say I'm very happy with the team so far this first half. Of course, they're in first place, a little precarious, but still couldn't expect anything better than first place. I think one thing has been overlooked a little bit. Never have I been a big A-Rod fan, but since he's returned, this whole team turned around. He has like 54 hits and 52 RBIs. That's like unheard of. So I think he's being a little underrated and been very quiet. And the other thing to share is defense. First base, it's so good to have a guy on the level of a Tino or Mattingly at first base. Just great. So I just think we're doing very well. Certainly, Halliday would be a great addition. Don't know that we need him, but if we don't have to give up too much, I think that would be fine. Thank you, Chris. You're a great show. I really enjoy it, and hope to see you on the podcast.
That is a tremendous point, Lucille.
The fact that she was the first She fan? Is that...
Well, that goes without saying, Joe. No, the fact that, you know, Yankee fans really haven't given A-Rod his due yet. I mean, it's been 5 years since he joined this team, and it's amazing. And I know he really hasn't performed in the playoffs the way Yankee fans would like him to. And, you know, there had been times in previous seasons where he wasn't performing in the clutch. But this year is kind of squashing that. 10 of his 19 home runs have either tied the game or put the Yankees in the lead. His hits to RBIs, as she brought up, is just redunculous. That's a new adjective that Webster should look into. I just think that it's about time that Alex Rodriguez starts to get his due and people start, you know, regardless of what happened in spring training, he came out, he admitted that he used PEDs, you know.
That doesn't even mean anything. I'm being serious. I mean, Manny Ramirez came back, and has he gotten any criticism?
No, it's the world we live in. It just seems like people accept it. It's the time that these players were involved in, and we've accepted it, and we're moving on. But I really think that's a great point by Lucille to bring it up. Alex Rodriguez should definitely, you know, stop hearing the boo birds at Yankee Stadium.
The one thing that we've learned about Alex Rodriguez on this team is that in 2004, they didn't need Alex to win. Now, the team is built around Alex. And we saw, you know, those first couple months, guys like Mark Teixeira and the rest of the lineup struggled when Alex wasn't in the middle of that order because they weren't seeing the pitches that they're seeing now. They don't want to pitch to Alex.
Well, that's a great point, too. And, you know, I said this at spring training when we were down with YesNetwork.com in Tampa, and I'll be the first one to admit I was wrong. I took all the credit in the world for being a lighthouse of hope and keeping everybody trying to stay positive, and I'll shoot myself down for being wrong about this. I sat at a table with four other employees from YES and told them dead in the face that without Alex Rodriguez, this team would still be competitive and would be in first place when he came back. Guess what? I was wrong. They were 13-15.
Yeah.
And when he came back, even though he wasn't, you know, he was on the interstate, it was like a switch flipped. And this team went from a team that's 13-15 to when he came back and he's been with the team, they're 22 games over 500. They have the best record in baseball. So it's obvious for this team to work, Alex Rodriguez needs to be in that lineup because pitchers have to change their entire game plan around that one single solitary person.
No, you're right. And he is the lightning rod. He really is what makes that lineup hold.
And as far as the money goes, I hear fans say this all the time, and I used to be one of these guys too. He makes all that money, and he doesn't get a hit in that spot. Well, guess what? It's the market he plays in. It's the salary that his agent, he, and the Yankee ownership worked out. It's a salary he commanded based on his numbers in the past. You got to deal with it.
That's it.
You got to deal with it. You're in the New York area. This isn't Podunk, Iowa. I don't know if that's where Podunk is. It might be Idaho, and I apologize to all the people, whoever Podunk is. It's a lovely place, I'm sure, but you're not making $30 million a year there playing baseball.
Right.
Right. In the New York area, you're gonna. So that being said, we're going to move on. And our next caller is Chris from Boston. Chris, take it away.
Good morning. This is Chris. I am a lifelong Yankee fan living in Boston in Red Sox land. and I wanted to know your thoughts on the whole Yankee pie in the face situation. I'm kind of getting killed up here in Beantown, and to be honest with you, I kind of agree it's not very Yankee-like, and I'd love to hear your opinion. Thank you very much.
All right, so Chris, living in Boston, getting hazed by some Red Sox fans up there about the pie in the face, which he thinks that it's not Yankee-like. Well, Joe, I'll let you respond, but I'm going to respond first. You know, God forbid this team has fun. God forbid. You know, they're very businesslike in the way they handle themselves with the media. They're very businesslike in the way they dress when they go on the road. They're very businesslike in every aspect they have around the field of play. They can't have facial hair. They can't have long hair. It's a business. That's the way the Yankees have run it, and that's the way the Yankees will always run it as long as the Steinbrenners are running this team. I have no problem with that. They look professional, but you're a baseball team. You're playing a kid's game. Mm-hmm. And guess what? From being at spring training and seeing how they hazed Johnny Damon when he threw the ball, and it's like you're out with your friends and you're playing a game of pickup baseball. You have to have some kind of fun. I'm sick of this un-Yankee-like. I'm sick of people saying Jabba Chamberlain shouldn't pump his fist. I guarantee you those same people who say Jabba shouldn't pump his fist played sports at one point in time in their life, and when they scored a touchdown or when they struck somebody out, they went off the field and they pumped their fist or they high-fived somebody. You're allowed to be emotional. And as far as A.J. Burnett goes, it's one thing, you know, to be 4-10 as a starter and shoving whipped cream pies in somebody's face. It's another thing being a very important cog of this Yankee rotation and winning games and being consistent out there on the mound and doing it and having a little fun. I have no problem with this. They are buttoned down and business enough. It's about time fans can see the other side of the personalities of this ball club. That's my take.
Don't you think the correlation of this team playing well right now has something to do with these guys having a little bit of fun and liking each other in that clubhouse? I spoke with Joe Girardi yesterday, and he told me...
Preach, brother, preach.
And he told me that this is one of the best clubhouses that he's ever been around as a player or a manager. He said that these guys just have a genuine... They like each other, they have fun, they actually go out with each other on the road. These guys are allowed to have fun. You know why? Because it's a game.
It's a game.
They're being paid to play a game.
And I know that annoys some people. Well, guess what? You're not a professional athlete. Suck it up. And you're not playing in the New York area. They are. These are the salaries that they commanded, as I just said. And Joey, you brought up a great point. The camaraderie and the togetherness, not only in the locker room, but outside it when they're on the road. And I think Joe Girardi's a big reason for that. He had a day off in spring training. They all went to play pool. He got them together because in order to be successful and do it on the field, you have to have some kind of connection with these guys off the field.
You know what? I'm going to even bring in the New York Giants. Just think about what the Giants did a couple years ago on their Super Bowl run. Tom Coughlin, for years, was always the strict, disciplinarian, buttoned down, and what did he do? He took everybody in training camp, and they went on a bowling trip. They went on a bowling trip. They all had fun, you know. He lightened up a little bit. This was something that, you know, all of the players said that they had to do. There was a camaraderie there. They all got along better, and they went on that unbelievable run. There is a correlation of guys liking each other and a clubhouse being fun and a clubhouse having chemistry to win. There is.
Some radio hosts might not put any validity on that, but I will. I just think when you're happier around the people you're playing with, I think that translates to better play on the field. Because I know when you're on a team and your friend is up there, you're rooting for him to do well. You're not rooting for him to strike out.
And not only that, Chris, but it also brings back the point that it's a game.
And
when you're having fun and you're around people that you like, you realize that it's a game and it makes everybody loose. It makes everybody looser. It really does.
Agreed. Let's move on now, Joe. Our next caller, Vito from New Jersey. Vito, take it away.
Hey, Chris. do you think it would be wise for the Yankees to go out and get a good defensive outfielder before the trade deadline? And I just want to tell you, I think you, Joe, and Glenn do a great job. Thanks, Vito from New Jersey.
A defensive outfielder. And well, first, let's say, you know, Joe, stop having your family call. and the Glenn he mentioned is Glenn Giangrandi, who also blogs on YesNetwork.com. He's on all the video segments that Joe produces. You see him for football. You see him for baseball. You see him for fantasy stuff. Glenn does a tremendous job. He also writes
for the Yes blog,
the pre and post game as well. Glenn Giangrandi.
That is actually his primary job.
Yes, that is his primary job, and he also blogs, and he is very good at what he does. So Vito wants to know, Joe, if the Yankees should bring in a defensive outfielder. I'm going to say no. I don't really think the Yankees need to touch what they have right now. If they want to improve the bullpen a little bit, maybe get a little insurance in the bullpen, fine. I think they have it in-house. If Bruni starts coming around, right. I think that, as we said earlier, that bullpen is stacked. You brought that up. I just, you know, Brian Cashman surprises you every year. You know, Damaso Marte and Xavier Nady came over at the deadline last year. So who knows what will happen this year. But I don't really think they need to touch the chemistry on this team. And I don't think they need to improve it at all. I think they're proving right now that they're good right now, built the way they are.
Well, the one thing that I really think they needed was a bench player who could play outfield and corner positions.
And they got that.
Who had a little bit of pop, and they got it. And Eric Hinsky has been really tremendous since coming over.
And he's great in the clubhouse.
He is. He's just a great guy.
I walked in there yesterday. He was going locker to locker, and he looked at one of the reporters, and he says, "I'm waiting for Gardner. He's my friend."
Yeah.
I mean, the guy just got here.
I know. He's a good guy. And, you know, as for a defensive outfielder, I think that in the future, this team is going to need to improve their defense in the outfield. Yes, I completely agree with that point. Melky is a decent outfielder who makes blunders every once in a while but has a plus arm. Brett Gardner has a lot of speed, but again, experience is not on his side. Left field is a major issue. Damon, every time a ball is hit out there, I wince. But Damon's bat is too valuable to not be in this lineup right now. And Swisher again. Swisher, you know, he's just an okay right fielder. In the future, yes, I think they need a defensive outfielder.
But not right now.
This year, I think they're set.
Eric Hinsky, problem solved. There you go, Vito. You've heard it from Joe and Chris, your two favorite people on YesNetwork.com. And Glenn, who's not here, but I'm sure he appreciates it as well. Our last phone call of Off the Wall, our first Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com, is Ross. Ross, vent away, my friend.
Yeah, this is Ross from New York, and I'm a very disgruntled Met fan. I cannot believe this latest news with Tony Bernazard ripping his shirt off and challenging his AA Binghamton Mets to a fight. You know what? I wish they would have fought him, because this guy's been nothing but a cancer to the Mets organization, which is coming off day after day as looking like a Mickey Mouse organization, and it all starts at the top with owner Fred Wilpon. I mean, there's no way this team is going to be taken seriously until it gets new ownership. They need to clean house. Omar needs to go. Manuel needs to go. And I'm not that confident in the core of Reyes, Beltran, and right over there at third base. I think something needs to happen. Something drastic needs to happen. We got a great stadium, but we got no team to play in it. Come on, Mets. Do something major.
All right, so Tony Bernazard.
Yes, the second man in charge behind Omar Minaya.
The vice president of player development tears his shirt off and challenges his AA Binghamton Mets to a fight. And wow, that's really mature.
And he targeted one player in general, Jose Coronado. He's a middle infielder for the AA team. To me, how unprofessional can you get?
Well, Binghamton had gone 1-6 during an early July homestand that coincided with the outburst, Joe. And the team was 37-58 and in last place in the Eastern League Northern Division entering Wednesday's scheduled games. Allegations of underage drinking on the team were apparently another factor in Bernazard's tirade, an organization source said, according to the report. I am reading this off of ESPN.com, just so you know where I'm getting it from. I know he did have a team meeting with them, and I said, according to the Daily News, this is Omar speaking now, it was not a you guys have been great meeting. I know he spoke to them in a stern voice, but as far as what he was wearing, what kind of shoes he was wearing, I don't know anything about that. Omar, listen, you got to be a little bit more on top
minor
league teams.
I don't get why Omar keeps defending this guy. I mean, his name has been brought up.
Maybe it's because Bernazard has something on the Wilpons or has something in his hip pocket on Omar.
I mean, he was the guy who basically went behind Willie Randolph's back, trashed him to the complete organization, and then leaked out to everybody that he was going to get fired when he was on the West Coast trip. He did that, and now he's doing that with Manuel from what we're hearing.
Let me throw this out there to all you Met fans. It was Willie's fault. Willie Randolph was probably my favorite Yankee of all time. I played second base. I emulated his every move. I looked up to him when I was a kid. And for him to get trashed the way he got trashed in this town on the other side of town that loves him so much, yeah, I guess it was Willie's fault. Now you guys are seeing where the real problem lies. And I guess it starts and ends with this guy Bernazard, because what he did with these minor leaguers, if the players are drinking, by the way, it's nobody's fault but this guy's. If he's in charge of these minor leaguers, then guess what? It's his fault. And if he's a vice president of player development and these players are developing while drinking adult beverages, this guy needs to go. It's obvious somebody else has to be in charge of these guys. And Ross, your tirade is well taken.
I mean, think about it. It's not just Bernazard. I mean, this is an Omar Minaya situation. Their major league club, it's showing that they have no depth in this organization with all of the injuries that they've had. There's nobody that can step in like what happened with the Yankees last year and make the Yankees had an 89-win season and they lost their ace of their staff. So it's just my point that something has to be done here. Minaya's not doing the job, Bernazard's not doing the job, and the Wilpons certainly don't know what they're doing.
Well, the AAA team, Buffalo, is 34-58. That's an International League worst entering Wednesday's games. What's going on? What's going on with the Mets farm system? And Ross wants to know, like, what's going on with the Mets future?
It's not looking bright.
No, and, you know, there was a proposed Halladay trade out there. And if it's true, John Heyman reported it from SportsIllustratedSI.com. And if this is true, if they turn down Halladay, I've talked to a couple people, and everybody has told me it has to be a monetary thing. And you got to think if the Wilpons are hurt or strapped for cash, because if you look at it, Joe, they're only going to have to take on half of his salary for the rest of the season. And then next year, if you have Johan Santana and Roy Halladay as your 1-2, how could you not do that? You might not compete, and you might not make the playoffs this year, but if you want to scrap this season and start rebuilding to next year, Roy Halladay with Carlos Delgado coming off the books next year?
It's the best 1-2 punch in baseball. It really is. Johan Santana Halladay would be the best 1-2 punch in baseball.
Well, Ross, I hope for your sake and all the struggling Mets fans out there that something happens and something gets done for your organization. And it seems to Joe and myself that it starts with this clown, Tony Bernazard. And if he wants to rip his shirt off in front of me, I'll rip mine off too. We'll be back to wrap up this Off the Wall right after this.
Go to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankee blogs, original content, and Yankees info on the web. Your one-stop site is YesNetwork.com.
And now, back to a bald host that doesn't get any respect, Chris Sheeran.
Isn't that the truth, Teddy? All right, we're going to wrap up this first edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Joey and I figured we would do something a little fun, and we would rank our top five baseball movies of all time. So we'll start at number five, and we'll let Joe go first. Joe, you have the floor. What's number five?
All right, my number five movie of all time is 61. Great film about that 1961 classic season with the M&M boys vying for the coveted Babe Ruth record.
Very interesting. My number five, and this is the one you're going to kick yourself on, that when we were discussing this, we both forgot at the time, but then I instantaneously remembered it, and I'm so glad I did, The Sandlot.
Oh, it's a great movie. That goes in my honorable mention.
That is a tremendous baseball movie. The Sandlot I could watch over and over and over again. That is my number five, Benny the Jet.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Just a great movie. The s'more scene is tremendous. All right, we can go on and on about
Sam. I don't know, the great Hambino?
The great Hambino. Some guy, so Baby Ruth.
All right, number four.
Number four.
All right, I've got The Natural. Just one of those movies where I know it's all Hollywoodized and it's, you know, the big scene at the end with all of the, you know, the light bulbs blowing up. And even in the book, he strikes out. He doesn't hit the home run. However, the performances of Robert Duvall and Robert Redford in that movie
absolutely
are
tremendous.
just make that such a good baseball movie.
My number four is Bull Durham, Kevin Costner, and oh God, the actress Susan Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon.
She slipped my mind there for a second.
Is with Tim Robbins.
Yes, Tim moment. Robbins, yeah. Who is Nuke LaLoosh, of course.
Come on, Nuke LaLoosh.
Chuck Hockett.
And candlesticks always make a good wedding gift.
Yeah, Arliss, of course, was in that. New Jersey's own Robert Wool.
Yes.
Very, very fine actor and very funny comedian. So Bull Durham would be my number four, and I would assume that that's somewhere in your list as well.
It's funny you say that because Bull Durham is my number three
movie.
There you go. I just want to go back to number four real quick because I want to say in The Natural, we have Wilford Brimley, who just loves his diabetes testing. He also loves Quaker Oats. But Bull Durham is my number three movie.
Okay. My number three would be Major League. Major League, of course, obviously one of the best baseball movies of all time. The one thing that my older brother and I, you know, every time we sit there, if they cut the whole Rene Russo thing completely out of the movie,
he would have no problem with it.
It would be even better.
I completely agree.
We didn't need
agree.
The whole Tom Berenger, Rene Russo love story for the women. We just wanted, you know, the locker room, the little Willie Mays Hayes and more of Charlie Sheen's character, Wild Thing, Rick Vaughn, which I bought the jersey to, by the way. So Major League is my number three.
And Major League is my number two. I swear to God, we just kind of listed this on our own.
Yes, we were in soundproof booths when we did
it's
this.
Like 21.
Yes.
This guy here is dead.
Well, cross him off then. You're going to hear from week to week on this podcast, the movie lines will be flowing, intertwining, you know, with the baseball talk and, you know, everything else, the pop culture. It'll be pop culture too, as, you know, you'll see in later weeks too. We're on number two now?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Number two. All
right, so number two, I have a tie. My tie at number two is The Natural, which you brought up earlier.
Great film.
Every time I see it, and as you said in the book, he strikes out, and in the movie, you know, it was Hollywoodized, as you brought up earlier too. But I get goosebumps, and you know, as a kid, you really didn't understand what was going on. All you really paid attention to was the baseball game. As you get older, you understand what behind the scenes, what was
right.
going on with Hobbs, and you know, and you read the book too when you get older, and you can understand what the hell is going on. So, The Natural is one tied at number two, and 61, which
gotcha.
You brought up earlier. I just thought Billy Crystal, who I love as an actor, I love as a comedian. I was brought up on, you know, Billy Crystal and George Carlin and all those guys, and the job he did on that movie. He's you know, number one Yankee fan. He was with them in spring
I have
training.
A problem with the Billy Crystal as the number one Yankee fan here. This is a guy who wore a Mets hat in that stupid movie about Curly and what was that movie? Curly's Gold
City Slickers.
He wore a Mets hat. How big of a Yankee fan could this guy be? Hello.
Norman, hello.
Hello.
But the one thing I wanted to bring up about 61 was the tremendous job of finding actors who looked exactly like Mickey and Roger. Barry Pepper.
And Thomas Jane. Who's currently in Hung, by the way,
yes,
which is
I know.
A good show.
We won't get into that. This is a G-rated podcast. But I have watched that, and he does a tremendous job in that, too.
I bet he does.
But he just... They looked so much the part that you actually felt like this was 1961.
No,
and how
job.
Crystal shot it and just everything about it was great. Now, drum roll, please. Joe, what is your number one movie?
I think this might be both of our number one movies. Field of Dreams.
And it is.
Field of Dreams, just from beginning to end, pulls the heartstrings. You get all the emotions. At the end, It always makes me, you know, my father, you know, and I, you know, always had a catch when I was a kid. You know, I tear up, I well up a little bit.
I can give you the same thing, and I said this earlier in the podcast as well. My dad caught minor league baseball, so when he sees his father for the first time and he's taking the catcher's equipment off, that's when I start. And when he looks at him and he's choked up and he says, "You want to have a catch?" It's Niagara Falls. It's over. It's Splitsville. And I know there's a lot of sports nuts, Mike and Chris included, who completely destroy this movie because Shoeless Joe Jackson was lefty, and in the movie,
well, we
the
can,
character
yeah.
hits righty.
Yeah. We're splitting hairs here.
I bypass that. I mean,
plus Ray Liotta plays Shoeless Joe.
Yeah, I look at it as, you
he's
know,
got his Pittsburgh connection, you know. $60,000, Karen! Sorry, I went
you're
to Goodfellas.
You're intertwining movies there. Well, there'll be plenty of Goodfellas and Godfather on yeah. this podcast as well. But we've also, after our top five, which we just gave you, we also came up, Joe actually came up with a list that we've all compiled, and Kevin Sullivan, if Joe's the Godfather, I guess Kevin is the Don of Yes Network.
He is the Don, yes.
So he had us come up with baseball movies we should burn. So we'll start with the list. And Joe, what's our
You
first
want one? The burning list first. Okay,
yeah,
the burn
go.
List is, well, see, Kevin liked Angels in the Outfield. We both we both think it's garbage. It is a garbage
Christopher
film.
Christopher Lloyd's a great actor, but
just call me Al.
Just stop.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Scout. That's a movie you liked, actually,
I like,
because you like Albert
because
Brooks.
Because I love Albert Brooks.
Steve Nebraska strikes out
27 in a row.
And I forgot Ozzie Smith was a power hitter. Yeah. They made him out to be this big power hitter. He's a power hitter hitting ninth,
yeah, well,
of course, yeah.
Yeah, but
it's a terrible film. Come
it's
on.
It's a terrible movie, but Albert Brooks is funny.
Major League 3, Back to the Minors.
Awful.
Jefferson
from
Scott Bakula.
And Happy Days, by the way.
Yes, he was. You know what? He's a guy, he's on Jump the Shark, Ted McGinley.
Ted McGinley.
If you join...
And the Love Boat. And he was the photographer of the Love Boat.
If you've ever been to jumptheshark.com, Ted McGinley is the number one reason for most shows jumping the shark. I swear to God. But it is not a good movie.
No, it stinks. On ice.
Fever Pitch. About the Red Sox. It is the Farrelly Brothers movie.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's funny. I've never
watched it.
I
never will watch it for obvious reasons.
I have one reason to hate that movie.
Jimmy Fallon?
Absolutely hate Jimmy Fallon. Absolutely hate that man.
I'm guessing you don't stay up till 12:30 to watch his show.
No, I don't. I actually think Craig Ferguson's funnier than him. But okay, we're going to go Summer Catch with Freddie Prinze Jr.
See, now, this is an interesting one.
Yes.
Because Jessica Biel...
She is in it. Yeah.
...was the reason why I did watch it. But overall, as a baseball movie... Terrible.
I believe Freddie Prinze's career is doing pretty well right now, too. Didn't he just get nominated for something?
Oh, God.
A Razzie?
Oh, boy.
And don't forget, we have the greatest of all of the bad movies, Ed. Joey from Friends and his monkey at third base.
Joey Tribbiani,
okay.
Bringing the hits.
We're going to go a little honorable mention right now.
Okay.
Movies that could be in a top 10, top 15. I had Pride of the Yankees, story about Lou Gehrig. Gary Cooper looks exactly like Lou Gehrig. It's a little hokey. It's from the 1940s, but it's a great movie. The Rookie. Kevin didn't like that movie, but we both liked The Rookie.
That was the one with Dennis Quaid.
Dennis Quaid is the Tampa
Bay Rookie of the Year with Rowan Gardner.
Okay, no, that goes into movies we burn.
Daniel Stern was just... unbearable in that movie.
Eight Men Out
is definitely an honorable mention, or could be in the top five. It
right.
wasn't our top five before
originally.
We started remembering a couple other ones.
Bang the Drum Slowly.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's a movie that I'm putting in as the honorable mention. I liked Little Big League. I had no problem with Little Big League. The kid is the manager.
Yeah.
Strategically, that's one of the better movies.
I've never seen that, I'll be honest, all the way through, so I really can't comment. It really didn't hold my attention either, so.
And a movie that I think is the bee's knees, Cobb. Oh, I love
that,
Cobb.
Oh, that was a talk about Robert Wool.
Tommy Lee Jones
was tremendous in that movie.
Oh, so good.
Tremendous. And if that's the way he was in real life,
Yes.
And that's the way everybody says he was in real life. Yikes. And you know what, Joe? I think that's going to wrap up our first Off the Wall podcast. I think it was a successful one, but that's my own personal opinion.
Well, it's no BS report with Bill Simmons, but, you know.
No, no. we bow down to Bill Simmons and his Red Sox Nation.
Yeah.
Not. Billy, you do a tremendous job, but we're going to try to mirror ourselves after you, but it's going to be Yankee-driven and not, you know, the river that bleeds red up in Beantown. So Yankee fans now have their own podcast. You could listen to Simmons, but you'd rather listen to us here on YesNetwork.com. But that's going to wrap it up for Joe Auriemma and myself, Chris Sheeran. That's going to do it for this first Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. We hope you come back every Wednesday because we'll be here. Hopefully you will be as well. Also, let's give some props to our luscious announcer, Teddy Spicer. Teddy, thank you very much. We'll see you next Wednesday, everybody. Have a great week.
Log on to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankees coverage on the web. And come back every Wednesday for a new edition of Off the Wall with Chris Sheeran.